You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Show Jumping Podcast, a fun and informative show for riders, owners, trainers, grooms, and fans of all levels.
I'm Ashley Winch in Kansas City, Missouri.
And I'm Christy McCormick in Saratoga Springs, New York. And you're listening to the Show Jumping Podcast, where we answer your riding questions and chat with fellow horse enthusiasts about the world of show jumping. We're so excited to be joined today by Brendan Wise, the bridleless phenom who has recently gone viral. You may have seen him and his horse Lyric on your Facebook or Instagram feeds, at WEC in Ocala, or even at Equine Affair a couple of weeks ago. And Ashley, I have to give you credit. This is your guest today, so thanks for taking the reins. Pun intended.
Look who has jokes today.
You know, I'm making the terrible jokes.
Brendan actually came into my inbox by many, many, many of our auditors, which are the Patreon members of our Horses in the Morning podcast, where Brendan joined Glenn and Allison on the Equine Affair show a couple months ago, and everybody was just begging for a deeper dive into Brendan's mind. So, Brendan, thank you so much for joining us today on the Show Jumping Podcast. And right out of the gate, another terrible pun, very much intended.
Let's see how many we can put in there today.
I'm all for it. Give me all
Brendan,
the puns.
Brendan, feel free to add in.
Yeah, for sure. You don't want to open that door.
Brendan, why do you think you've been going viral recently with all of your bridleless rounds?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's certainly something that wasn't wholly expected. But I think any time that somebody does something that's a bit out of the box, especially if they do it to a level that maybe a lot of people haven't seen too much before, it's one thing for... There's a good amount of bridleless riders who have gone around an exhibition and jumped around some small courses or put some grid together. And we've seen some amazing, wonderful people both in the States and in Europe doing some great things with bridleless jumping. And I'm so excited for it. But certainly to step into competition against other bridled horses at a fairly high level is not something that we've really explored too much in this world yet. So if I could pinpoint something, I think it would probably be that, the idea that I see this as something viable for competition against bridled horses, and I want to step into that ring and compete against them as one of them. That's something that's a bit new territory to be explored, and Lyric obviously is an incredible horse and is giving me an incredible opportunity to see what we can do with that.
While the idea of riding bridleless certainly gives me an ulcer from anxiety, Reline GI by Haggard Pharmacy is here to make sure ulcers don't affect your ride. Are you looking for a natural, long-term solution for your horse's digestive health? Reline GI goes beyond just treating systems. This unique combination of gut-supporting hyaluronan and immune-boosting beta-glucan works in harmony with your horse's body to soothe and protect their digestive system. Unlike other options that can disrupt digestion and nutrient absorption, Reline GI maintains your horse's natural balance. Don't just rely on our claims. Reline GI is trusted by leading veterinarians and supported by scientific research, including a study by Dr. Nathan Slovis that demonstrated its effectiveness in reducing ulcers in active horses. Plus, it's Clean Sport certified, making it safe for use in competitions. Don't forget, for an additional 10% off, use code SJP at checkout. When I saw the video three or four weeks ago, I just was like, this man's crazy.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
The best riders are, in my opinion. So, Brendan, tell me more about your background. From my research, I found that you really started in natural horsemanship, then kind of went into the ranch, cow, reining, Western scene, onward to classical dressage, and now, or in tandem, doing the show jumping. Can you tell me about your journey?
Yeah. I would say that's a pretty accurate timeline of how things progressed. As a young child, you know, I really honestly mostly did just trail riding and just enjoying my horses. But, you know, when you're a young kid and you are a fairly athletic kid and you can stick on the bad horses, that's basically what happens, is they start to put you on the bad horses. And out of sheer survival, you start to wonder, how can I make the bad horses good? And I think that's what really started me getting down the idea of, you know, is this something I want to explore in training, not just riding and enjoying horses for what they are, but exploring the puzzle and the training of it. And I often tell people, I love horses. I really do. I love the dynamic with them. I love the relationship you can build with them. I love just being around them and riding with them. However, there's something that I might love even more than just that dynamic, and that's the puzzle. I love the puzzle. I love the analytical relationship puzzle that is training and riding in any discipline, but certainly when you have disciplines as fascinating as dressage and jumping and reining and all these really cool disciplines, I just really love the puzzle. So me, as that kind of young man that was extremely analytical and loved strategy and puzzles in general, horses in some ways became a big puzzle and just a never-ending one that was super, super fascinating to me. Growing up, anywhere from the ages of, you know, 8 to 14, I was being fed a lot of the principles of the Lions legacy and the Lions family. So it was natural when it came time for me to pursue my more professional career, or at least higher level education in a more formal way, turning to the Lions and the program that they had at the time was a no-brainer for me. So my first real mentors and trainers and teachers in the horse industry were really John Lyons and his son Josh Lyons. And I definitely spent the majority of my time with Josh Lyons and got to go some really cool places and tour a little bit with John as well. And all of those experiences really built the pillars of what I'm able to do now in understanding horse communication, understanding people communication as well, and being able to break down difficulties and troubles into a way that I can systematically develop a plan that makes sense to me and makes sense to the horse. So that's really where it started. And I took a good long while to work with problem horses and young horse starting and all around just general horsemanship for a long time. And Josh Lyons is quite a good reiner, and he's such a gifted trainer. But he got me into it as well, and it became a big fascination of mine in reining. So spent some time there, decided for various reasons to step away from the reining industry and some Western industries in general. I think if I were to just quickly sum that up, it would really be that I couldn't find a way to do it that didn't also cause my horses to break down or become eventually weaker because of the training rather than stronger. Mm-hmm. I saw the toll that it took on my horses, and it was a very tough decision, but I needed to find something different. So a good friend of mine at the time, Teresa McManus, just an amazing, eccentric lady, she saw that I was searching, and she just put books in my hand. Old classical masters just handed me books and said, read this, let's chat about it. Read this, let's chat about it. And it was everything I ever wanted to know, and I didn't even know existed. I had no idea. I knew there was something called dressage, and it looked really cool. But I had no idea to the depth that the dressage went and the classical masters took it. So that really sent me on a tailspin. If I thought the puzzle was big enough already, the puzzle just got a lot bigger, mm-hmm. You know? And it became a fascination with the mechanics of the horse, the musculature of the horse, the systematic training to both maintain the integrity of the horse's mind and the integrity of the horse's body and bring those up together. That became a really a lifelong goal to understand that better. And then later on down the road, I discovered show jumping. A lot of my students were show jumpers and eventers that wanted better dressage. And they just kept asking me for jump lessons, and I didn't feel qualified. So I thought, hey, let's figure out this game a little bit more. And just fell in love with it. Just absolutely fell in love with it. And really, quite honestly, I've only been show jumping for about 3 years.
No fooling.
Yeah, it really hasn't been that long that I've actually devoted time to show jumping. But I'm in love with it so much, and I'm having so much fun, and have gotten to sit on some horses that have taught me a lot and give me some good opportunities. And I have to give a shout out to Andrew Ross. I know I'm kind of going on a long-winded tangent here, but have to give a shout out to Andrew Ross, who is my jump trainer, who just revolutionized the way that I jump and my balance in the saddle. And I know without doubt that I would not be able to do Lyric Justice bridleless if I didn't have Andrew in my corner showing me his wisdom and his expertise. So that's an invaluable resource for me, is to have that jump instructor and the time that I've had with him. But so Western to dressage to jumping to smashing everything together, and here we are.
Here you are. So Brendan, when did bridleless show jumping become a part of your routine?
Yeah, so bridleless show jumping was not really something that I thought a lot of until my ex-wife and great friend and partner, she had a horse that was given to us. He was a really disturbed, troubled, hot mess of a horse that had been a little bit of a failed attempt at a show jumper, and then was working on dressage, and that didn't work either. So he wound up in our hands, and I restarted him under saddle and got him going. And we discovered that he did like jumping, but it was a little bit of a hot mess. And even we were good friends with somebody who knew Wings when he was a three-year-old. And she describes as watching him go around was kind of like watching a rodeo. Mm-hmm. It was just a mess. So Vlad was one. We call him Vlad. His name's Wings. But Wings was one that, we sort of through fate started to work with him a little bit bridleless, because we were getting ready for an exhibition. We had just lost Melanie's horse Boyd, who was a great exhibition horse, and he's got a cool story as well. But we didn't really have anybody else, so Melanie started to play with Wings bridleless, and we found that he was just more relaxed and he was happier jumping that way. And there's a lot to that story, and I encourage people to look up Unbridled Wings and learn all about Melanie and Wings' story, because it's absolutely incredible. But that led her to jump in the Washington International Show bridleless together. And the crazy thing is, their first time going to Washington bridleless was their very first jump course bridleless. They had not jumped a full course bridleless until that day, and I think we're a little nuts for doing it, but quite honestly, in the bridle, it was going to go bad. Bridleless, we had a shot to at least get around the course and him be happy. So that's what we went with, giving him the best shot to be happy going around that course. After that, we really sat down and said, we can't put him back in the bridle. He's happier this way. He jumps good this way. We need to make this something that's viable for him. And I would say Wings is really the one creating the system for Wings and Melanie, and with Melanie, he was really the one that showed me something that said, okay, bridleless for me is no longer just about the exhibitions and the expos and having fun. This is something that's important possibly for some horses to have this option, to be able to be this way. And Wings hasn't had a bridle in his mouth since 2017. And I have several other students who are full-time bridleless as well. And I'm not saying everybody has to do that. I have nothing against bits at all. But I like to have options to see mm-hmm. what the horse is happiest with and what it goes best in. And even if you cross-train it, there's a lot of benefits. And even the riders, when the riders learn how to bend and balance and posture the horse and do sideways movements and do everything that you would do in the bridle bridleless, you start to look at the horse differently, from internally differently, the way you ask it. So it becomes a really, really interesting tool. So as we created that for Wings, that really got the brain ticking. Like, what can we do with this? How far can this be taken? How viable can this be for a horse to learn to do this in the show jump ring? And can it be competitive? Can real technical courses be done this way? And so Vlad did it, and he did it up to the 120 meter level. And Lyric is my chance to see how far we can go with this. And we jumped our first 140 Grand Prix together, bridleless. It wasn't perfect. We have a lot of work to do there. But just the fact that I got in the ring with him and we showed that we can do the technical elements of it, he jumped through the treble so, so amazingly. It's just exciting. It's super, super exciting to me to think this is something that could really, it could just challenge the thought process. It could challenge what we think is possible. And that's exciting to me.
I can hear it in your voice. Like, truly, I can feel the excitement, the positivity, the sense of wonder just radiating through you. And that it gets me jazzed. So when you found Lyric, did you get Lyric with the intention to start this bridleless adventure? Or did Lyric tell you in his own way, like, hey, I don't want to work in the bridle anymore? How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, for sure. So Lyric, we actually originally bought for Melanie as a replacement for Wings, because Wings is 22 at this point. And we got Lyric, I guess, about 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. And that was supposed to be her replacement show jumper. And the funny part is I didn't like Lyric. When I saw videos of him and I saw him jumping around, there wasn't much that I loved about him, and I really didn't want her to get him either. He just looked like too much blood. He looked like too flat of a jump. I didn't get a good taste from the way that he jumped and the way I liked him, but she fell in love with him. And so we got him, we brought him over here, and she started to show him a little bit. And it was such a completely different ride than Wings. Wings was a small, compact, you know, very agile, quick, bloody type of a ride. Lyric is a more big step, methodical. Your rounds have to look like equitation courses if you're going to make it all smooth. Otherwise, his stride just eats up the lines. He can take one and two strides out of lines so, so easily that everything has to be more on an equitation type step to make it really work until we get to the jump off. So it was a different ride for her. I don't know that they ever really quite came together. They worked really hard and they made so much progress to their credit, but I don't know that they fully, fully came together. And actually, unfortunately, Lyric and Melanie had a bad wreck together. It's either last year or the year before, last winter or the year before. Probably the year before, but they had a bad wreck together, a rotational fall, and that really took a lot out of Melanie, her desire for competition, her desire to try more difficult things, and I completely understand that because it was a horrific wreck.
Sure.
And at the time, I had just sold my show jumper, Ipsy was an absolute blast, just the horse I needed so, so much at the time. And right now he's having fun with his young junior rider and they're having a blast, and I love Ipsy. But Ipsy wasn't going to take me much further. We did some 130s together, but he really wasn't going to go much further than that. So I wanted to go further. Ipsy sold, and there's Lyric. He's just sitting there with nothing to do. So I'm like, all right, buddy, you know, here we go. we're gonna give it a shot. And I tell you what, him and I just clicked. We just clicked, and it just started to come together. He needed help in the flat work department, and I could give that to him. And he helped me in the show jumping department. And it was right about that time that Andrew and I started to work more together. We devoted a really great winter working closely together. And it just gelled more and more and more. And Lyric and I, within a few months, jumped our first Grand Prix in the bridle together. And it was a really great round. And so him and I just developed this bond and relationship that just worked. And then realistically, it wasn't until months and months later, actually, it really wasn't until August of 2023 that Lyric and I started to work bridleless together. And some of that was in preparation for Equine Affair Massachusetts. We had created a new second act that needed a second horse, and I wanted Lyric to do it. We had worked a little bit bridleless just on the flat, just because it's fun. We had never really jumped a lot together. And so having the second act that I wanted to do at Massachusetts for Equine Affair, it's like, all right, buddy, we need to spend some more time doing this. We need to put this together a little bit more. And he just took to it so well. And already we had been on the same page, but the flat work of the bridleless work became really fluid, became really nice. He started to understand very well the bending and the posturing and the balances that I needed for him to do course type work. And particularly after we jumped through Equine Affair in Massachusetts, which was his kind of first ever big night show for him to do that. After that, I was like, you know, there might be really something here. Like, I think we can do this. I think we can do this on a much bigger level in the courses competitively. And so I knew I was going to be coming down to Ocala for this winter. And coming down here, that was my goal. My goal was like, all right, Lyric and I are going to give this a shot. We're going to see if we can take this into competitive courses and make it work. And we had done some schooling shows prior to that, and he did fantastic. A little rocky the first show, but after that, he did really fantastic. And so it was just kind of like, okay, here's Weck and Hits, and showed a little bit in the bridle in the beginning of the year, and then started moving into some bridleless courses. Lyric is, contrary to what he looks like in some of the videos, Lyric is not brave. He's actually a peaky guy. He really is. He can very easily get intimidated on course. He absolutely despises Liverpools. And so, you know, it's not only do I have the difficulty of trying to figure out bridleless rounds with him, but I have to try to inspire as much confidence as I can for him when the scary stuff does come up. So probably if he wasn't as peaky and a little bit not super, super brave as he is, we might have been able to do a little bit more this winter. But he showed me that it's possible, and he showed me that he loves it and can do it and jumps great in it. Lyric is one that I wouldn't necessarily say has to go bridleless. And well, I haven't had a bit in his mouth in quite some time now, but certainly there are times that I go back and forth with him to work on some things. But for him, it's more of a personal mission for him. It's not like Wings, it's not like Bell, it's not like Piper, where these horses just have screamed out, I only want to be bridleless. Lyric is one that has told me that I can do this, and I love it, and let's see what we can do together. So that's more where he's at.
So, Brendan, I love your philosophy, and you inspire me as a rider when I watch your videos. I mean, you just look like your timing with him is so lovely. But I'm going to ask you some of the questions that I know our listeners are wondering, and that's really the, how the F do you steer without a bridle? And I mean that as a joke, but also seriously, you know, I've given lots of lessons on riders who have terrible hands or have just bad habits with their hands. And we work with riding in a halter. We work with riding on the buckle. We work with, you know, really using our legs and all of our other aids to steer. So I definitely understand the mechanics of using less rein. And for me as a rider, you know, I've done tons of show jumping. I've done tons of hunters. I always love a soft hand to the point where I drop my reins unintentionally when I shouldn't. Yeah. But, you know, I'm always working on when to give back to the horse's mouth. So I completely understand the premise of the why. But I guess the how sort of still boggles my mind, especially when you get to, like you said, the technical courses, not just the slowing down, but the turning, the jump offs. You know, you watch McLean or you watch Kent turn and steer and get those horses right to the base of the jumps, trying to do as few strides as you can. I almost don't understand the mechanics of how you can really do that and be competitive. I can see it in a nice flowing wide approach. I just don't know, how do you approach that in terms of the jump off? And just again, literally, how do you turn left and right without a bridle?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So I'll kind of separate that into two parts. The first part being the mechanics of how it works. And that I would say splits into two phases. The first, very first phase of the horses learning the bridleless work in this specific method. There's a bunch of different types to do bridleless. My original was with nothing at all, no neck rope, nothing like that, just seat and leg and voice. And that's more of a Western type thing. Some people use two dressage whips or a carrot stick or something like that, which is obviously not something that can be taken into competition. And then we land on sort of the neck rope way to do things. And I've landed with the neck rope just because there's so much more that's necessary in the balance of the horse, the adjustability of the horse, the bending and the posturing that really is impossible to do, at least. Shouldn't say anything's impossible at this point, but I haven't found it possible to do in the context of riding a competitive course without some help from the neck rope to assist in translating what's coming from my body and my seat. So mechanic-wise, the beginning phase, the horse learns to keep its shoulders in between the boundaries of the neck rope, very much like you would think a Western horse learning to neck rein, very much the
Okay,
same way.
so I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. So before you even, obviously a lot of work goes into training a horse without a bridle, but you do spend a lot of time working with the one particular horse or whatever horse it is on almost like a new skill, learning the neck rein.
You can think of it just like starting a young horse. The young horse has to learn the language of the bit or the language of the halter, the first, barrier of breaking down the no communication zone to having some sort of way to translate my thoughts to the horse. Very much the same way the young bridleless horse is learning the language of the neck rope, the very simple forward, backward, left, right. Think of it that way. Stay between the boundaries of the neck rope. When I lift up on the neck rope and he feels pressure on the base of his neck, he's to back away from it, or she's to back away from that pressure and rein back and be able to back up. Those are the very first bare bones breaks, if you will, of the horse being able to understand to be sensitive to the neck rope. And then from there, teaching them to turn and keep their shoulders between the boundaries of the neck rope for just very, very simple left and right steering. Now, realistically, even with a half decently quiet horse, if you have even just that forward from the leg, being able to have some breaks and back up from the pressure of the neck rope and a little bit of steering left and right from the neck rope, you can actually do some pretty cool stuff just with that in show jump courses if the horse has some sensitivity to it. And it starts there. But when you get to more technical work and you start saying, okay, what type of stride do I want my horse to have with for this element, for jumping into this element? What type of turn and balance and bend do I want to have to shape my lines, especially difficult bending lines that have options between an ad stride or a regular stride? All these start to come into play. And so the steering starts to get different as well. It goes from just guiding to the shoulders to adding more elements in of shaping the horse to the line that I want to ride and letting that shape guide where he goes. Similar to the idea we talk about in dressage between the inside leg and the outside rein. Well, very much for this kind of bridleless horse, the horse is captured between my inside leg and my outside aids, both my outside seat bone, neck rope, and outside leg to help shape the horse into the lines that I want to ride. And that determines a lot of his bend and balance as well. And then from there, I can do things with my seat as well as my body and pressure from the neck rope as well, translated through my body. Similarly to, if we have the reins in a good position in our hand and we sit further back, if the hand goes with us, the horse will feel the pressure from the rein with the solidification of our body to say, hey, can you elevate the stride a little bit as my seat comes down into the horse? Similarly with the neck rope, if I sit up in my saddle and my hands follow with my body and feel the translation of that energy going down into my seat, up through my body, then he can also feel the neck rope lifting up his chest and engaging the muscles, all the lifter muscles that would lift up through his withers, up to his poll. He can feel that as well, some of the translation from the neck rope as I ride up into the pressure of the neck rope to create that collection. So that comes into it as well as we shape those lines and adjust the stride as we go.
And do you think, you know, it sounds like Lyric is so nicely sensitive to those aids and you've clearly trained him really well. I know some difficult horses that I've ridden that I can barely steer with a very large bit in their mouth. Do you think it really, you need to have a horse that has a really good range of sensitivity for the rider's aids? I guess what I'm asking is, can you do this on any horse?
Right. Yeah. Super good question. So I would say
in the ring, like in the show
ring, meeting. Right. I would say to be competitive at a high level, it takes a lot of discipline and perhaps a special horse. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be a particular type of horse. Two good examples, Wings, hot, strong, sensitive horse. Lyric, a little bit dull in the mouth at times, but more of a big lumberly type of a stride, naturally wants to be on his shoulders, not at all on the quarters. So two very, very different types of horses. I find that the horses that are oftentimes the strongest in the mouth and have the most blood oftentimes take to the bridleless better than any other. Mm. I think part of that is because they already have so much in their cup, so much that they relate to the rein, the rider, the seat, the hand. The cup's already full. So it's very difficult to put more in the cup because it's already full. Why don't we just create a new cup altogether? And it becomes something that I'm not trying to add to what the horse knows. I'm recreating it altogether. It's something new. So it gives the horse to be stripped down and without all of the pre-assumptions that the horse might have of what it already knows, this becomes something completely brand new. And so in that way, I find that sometimes the horses that you least expect to be good at this actually can be quite good at it. Now, to take it into high-level competition, that's to be determined. TBD on that one. I haven't done
Meaning back to, you know, getting really tight tracked on jump-offs. Right.
Really
yeah.
tight tracks on jump-off, really technical elements. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of these elements such as combinations, triple combinations, two strides, one strides, back-to-back lines, all this stuff. The horse, in order to be successful, the horse has to learn to be able to jump independently and regulate its stride through those elements independently. Once I'm jumping into a combination, there's not much that I can do to manipulate what Lyric's doing or Vlad's doing. I need to do my homework at home and have them extremely confident, basically doing those elements on their own. I get you there. After I get you there, Jesus, take the wheel. You do what you need to do. Now, granted, in my opinion, that's how I should be training all of my show jumpers in the bridle.
Sure.
The same exact way. So in some ways, experiencing it bridleless has shaped and changed how I approach the bridled horses in that I want them now to be so much more independent. And if I help them out, it's maybe one or two times per course. But after that, there's not much more I can do. They have to be independent in their job and be able to do it without as much my help beyond getting them to the fence with the pace and the balance I want them to do their job with. As far as them being able to make the tightest turns and the rollbacks and all of that, I think that it's helpful to have somewhat of a horse that you can motivate. It doesn't have to be the most sensitive one or the tidiest one, but if you can find some way to motivate it that it understands what you're looking for, then I find that they catch on to it pretty quickly. Similarly, like I said, coming from a cow horse background, a reining type of a background, you know, the reining rollbacks and the reining spins and the agility that those horses were able to get into, I would take the very similar ideas into the bridleless work with the jumpers. Being able to do things like, you know, jump over a cross rail, two strides, halt, take two steps back, roll it back, jump it again, two strides, halt, back up, take two steps, roll it back. That kind of stuff for them to tune into the shape of my body, the guiding of my neck rope, for them to be jumping, thinking at any moment we could halt and roll back. That's an important idea. This is an extreme example, but I'd like to be able to jump into a two-stride line at a meter 30, and in the middle, if I pick up on my neck rope and say halt, the horse halts.
Sure. I
want to have that level of control to make it possible.
Well, and I guess that control is exactly the question, you know, with what it looks like. It looks like you have very little control, but in fact, you're actually just using different aids to keep your control. And I think that's really special. It is very different thinking. You know, I think that it's awesome for us to be challenged to reassess how we train horses. I certainly have spent a lot of years dealing with very hard-mouthed horses that I wish I could figure out how to ride them without that problem. So I'm sure half of them would have said, thank you for taking this out of my mouth. But then my next question would be, okay, now what? And what do I do? So I do love that process. I think that's wonderful. My last question for you is, while you say you don't have to have the same type of horse that does this, but it does take a special horse. And I think by special horse, we're all understanding that that means an in-tune horse, right? Yeah. That can take the aids and learn and progress. I think we've all ridden some horses that it would not work on. I've certainly tried to train horses that my training techniques don't work on. But what about as a rider? You know, what are some, if somebody wanted to practice this at home with their horse and just give it a try at a novice level, not competitive, what are some of the things that they could start with? And can any rider try this?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I'll take the example of, you know, I would say any horse that I've encountered, say like a 2.6, 2.9 course, as long as it has the physical capabilities of jumping a 2.6, 2.9 course, you know, the 0.80s, the 0.70s. When my ex and I were running B&M Sport Horse Sales and we ran a lot of horses through that program, every single horse that came into the program could jump a course, a 2.6 course bridleless, every single one of them. The big draft horses, the little ponies, the thoroughbreds, everything in between learned to be able to do it. So I would say at those lower levels, yeah, I think every horse can do it to that extent. And I think that every rider with the right guidance could also do it. And it would be, I think, a benefit to them to let go of the rein a little bit and to think in a way that requires the horse to be independent, requires the horse to carry itself and have its own speed control. I think that's important for them to realize that these things are a priority. And when you take the bridle away, all of a sudden for us as well, they become a priority. It's amazing how when you're in the bridle, sometimes you have horses that are constantly leaning into the reins or running away with the rider. And the riders are content to just manage it. They're content to say, I don't really feel like fixing this. I don't know how to fix it, but I'll just manage it. And it's okay as long as we're not dying. When you're bridleless, you don't have that luxury. You just don't.
Have you ever been run away with bridleless?
I have. I have been run away with.
And then what?
And then at that point, quite honestly, most horses that are running away, if you just leave them alone for a second, when that panic starts to go away, you can actually get them back fairly quickly. It's when you start taking and trying to drag them or anything like that, then it starts to escalate the emotions further. But all the horses that, you know, have maybe run away a little bit, and it doesn't happen too often because we try to give them as much of a good progression as possible. But certainly, you know, there was one time where Wings ran away with Mel, and it was actually quite entertaining. And there was one time, this is a little bit different, where my dressage horse, Arwin, when we were first figuring out how to build effective neck ropes for what we do, mine broke. I was in the canter and mine broke and I had nothing. And Arwin is a very hot, sensitive horse. And she panicked a little bit and she took off and we were doing some laps around the arena. And eventually the panic subsided and she came back down. I was able to talk her through it. But at that point I had nothing on her whatsoever. Just rode it out. And I had other people in there with the ring. So they were able to kind of just head her off a little bit and get her to the point where her brain was thinking again. So, yeah, I would say if you ride enough bridleless horses long enough, it's probably going to happen, but it's really been few and far between. I think part of that is, like I was saying, you start to realize your own humanity and your self-preservation a bit better, so you're more cautious. I like to make sure I have brakes. I like to make sure the horse understands what it means to stop and back up. It's so important. So all throughout the training process of the bridleless horse, I'm constantly affirming the brakes. I'm constantly affirming the adjustability and the stop and back up. There's hardly ever a time that I'm riding bridleless that I just stop. I almost always affirm the idea to back up off of the pressure of my neck rope, whether it be coming from a canter or a walk or a trot. I'm always affirming that idea. Similar to a reining horse, hardly ever just stops. Most of the time it's stop, yield, take a few steps back up. Similar thing, similar idea. So I want the horse to always be tuned into that idea that we're going forward, but at any time, I could say the words, I could sit down, I could lift up on my neck rope, and the horse is content to shut it down. If I don't feel the horse content to shut it down immediately when I ask, I don't move on to the next step. And it's just as simple as that. I don't want to ever push them beyond what they're mentally and education-wise ready to handle. And when you're bridleless, I think that comes into your mind more than maybe in the bridle. I'd push a little further than they're comfortable, or I'd push a little further than maybe they're ready for, because I can quote unquote make it happen. I can't always make it happen in the bridleless, so I have to take more diligent time educating and making sure they're ready.
Sure. Yes. Okay. This is my actual last question. Do you think bridleless as a rider is better in show jumping than bridle riding? And if so, why? And that's probably your whole podcast, and I'm just asking you to repeat it. But I guess simpler term, do you think it's better?
No, I don't necessarily think it's better. Like I said, I'm not against bits. Lyric jumps very well in a bit, and all of my jumpers have jumped very well in the bridle. So I don't think it's better. I think that there are some horses that it's better for. Those are few and far between, but there have been some horses that have clearly demonstrated this works better for me.
Yeah. I love that. I love listening to the horse and finding what they are, you know, trying to really listen to what they want. Like you said, it's a puzzle trying to find out what is best for this horse.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would love to see people have the option of, as long as it's safe, as long as it's healthy, have the option of saying, this is what my horse is telling me works best for him or her. So is it better than being inside a bridle? No, I can't honestly say that. I think that there are benefits to it in cross training. I think that some horses tell me that they would rather be this way. As far as a competitive standpoint goes, you know, you can always make more happen in the bridle, surely by the nature of it. If I jump off of a fence and I need to roll back and my horse doesn't respond as well as I want to bridleless, that's just it. He didn't respond as well. There's nothing more I can do. In a bridle, if I'm trying to be competitive and the horse is bulging out, there are things with the bridle that I can do to make it happen more so than the bridleless. So yeah, I mean, it's a little bit to be determined, but if I'm thinking about purely just chasing the first place blue ribbon, there are times that the bridle is going to be more effective. If I am more concerned with giving my horse the happiest ride that he could have, then sometimes I feel like there's something to be had in the bridleless and what it can do for the horse and rider. I wouldn't say it's one or the other. I would say do what's best for that horse.
I do love that answer because I am all about, you know, what's best for the blue ribbon, but what's best for the horse and what's best for a successful round and what that means to you. So yeah. Congrats on some awesome successful rounds. Like I said, the videos I've seen, I'm so impressed and inspired as a rider. So I really applaud what you're doing and your approach. I think it's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Brendan, I just have to say, I love the idea of kind of keeping, as foreign as it sounds, keeping this idea of bridleless riding as a tool in your toolbox. And if our listeners were interested in adding this tool, where would they be able to find you?
Yeah, sure. So the website unbridledwings.com has both the neck rope that I developed with Melanie as well. We developed this neck rope, and we find it the most effective thing for what we do, the higher level dressage, the higher level jumping and such. It's very, very effective. So they can find that neck rope for sale on unbridledwings.com, as well as on there, there's a free 20-minute video that goes through all of my beginning steps to introduce the neck rope and teach it and get the horse to the point that they're comfortable where in a safe, enclosed environment, I can take off the bridle and start to work around in the flat work pretty efficiently. So that's free on the website for people to access at any time. Within the next year is my goal. I am right now developing and creating a whole online academy devoted to the bridleless dressage, the bridleless jumping, taking it all the way up to the high level competitiveness of it that we have developed. So I would tell people, you know, be looking for that, be looking teasers for that to come out, and be looking for this time next year, that online academy to be available for people that they can learn all of what we do rather than just see it in videos, but learn in detail how we progress it, how we bring it up, and how we teach it. So that's coming soon.
Awesome. Brendan, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us today. I know we went over, but I could honestly just hear you explain this for hours because it's just such an exciting concept. And while it terrifies the beans out of me, I get it. And I see it, why it is exciting and why everybody's watching. So best of luck to you and Lyric. Know that we will keep an eye on you and we hope to have you on when your academy drops and we can talk about that some more.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be great. Thank you guys so much.
Fantastic.
Thanks a lot, Brendan. Thanks for joining. That was really fun.
Thank you, Christy. I appreciate it.
Now for everyone's favorite part of the show, well, mainly mine, it is the Q&A segment. First off, we have Christina from Rhode Island who wrote in, when a horse is being very difficult to ride, having a bad day or behaving poorly, what do you focus on to make sure that the ride is still positive?
Well, let's see if we can learn something from Brendan's interview. I think his philosophy would be to break things down and see what sort of positive response you can get from your horse starting from the basics. You know, I think that any horse, when you're riding them and they're having a bad day, and that could be for a multitude of reasons. You know, we're not always our best when we get out of bed. So maybe they're feeling a little stiff. Maybe they're not in the mood to be ridden that day. Maybe they really just want to roll their eyes at you and say, what are we doing? Those things happen. So I think lowering expectations for your ride and choosing to focus on something that's in the past might have been easy for them, whether that's just some basic trotting flat work or a small jump that you can make a circle over and over with. I think that those things have to be positives to feel like you're making any progress, especially when you're on a ride that just feels like you're going nowhere. Maybe you're going even backwards. Maybe you had a great ride the day before and now your horse today just is not in the mood. And you can't think, oh, everything I did yesterday is for nothing. You have to know that that's still in the bank. And the lessons you taught your horse yesterday and the exercises that you did with them are still going to come out later when they are having a good day. We all have bad days and you got to think of it like yourself. How do I feel? If I feel crappy, I just do a little less. What do I need that day? And what does my horse need that day? And not all days are going to progress in a real nicely forward line. So take a step back, do something simple, make it easier on them and see if they're giving back to you a little bit and can meet you in the middle.
I mean, I know for me, whenever I'm having a bad day, I put on Real Housewives. So who's to say you can't just put your iPad in their stall, put on some Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
And you know what? Sometimes you got to call it. Sometimes you got to go, you know what? I'm getting nowhere today. I'm either going to get off and go and let my horse graze and have a positive experience with them. That's definitely something that you want, is you don't want everyone, yourself and horse included, to just say, well, then fine, we're just done for the day. That's basically like shutting down and not even getting to watch Real Housewives. So go outside, go on a trail ride, go do something nice and easy. And if you have an event or something coming up, let's say the next day, take the pressure off of that too. That's really just more in your head than anything else. Just let it be a nice day and a nice ride with zero expectation. And sometimes that will give you more space for a better horse the next day.
Love that. Next up, we have Susan from Massachusetts, who wrote, how do you get comfortable with a deeper distance when your eye sees the bigger one, but you don't have enough pace to back it up?
Ooh, I love this question. So this definitely is something I had to work on, because I love the long distance and I love to gallop down and leave out a stride. And sometimes I don't have the pace to back that up. And a lot of what I teach my riders is first off pace. And we've talked about that a lot in this podcast. And understanding what kind of pace and impulsion, two different things, that do you need in order to move up to the distance. Now, the problem where Susan is talking about is in when you're out of the turn and your eye sees that distance, and maybe your horse has a big stride and maybe they've shown you that in the past, but you really don't have the pace to back that up. The first thing is making a decision. The first thing is acknowledging that. And that's you got to do this in a stride or two and recognize, do I have enough pace to get there or do I not? And if I don't, I definitely need to take every stride that I'm cantering on between now and the jump to shorten the stride and help my horse fit that distance in. Because the last thing you want to do is question yourself for three more strides, thinking maybe you can leave it out and then realize, oh no, it's too far away. Well, now you're definitely on the half stride and you're SOL. So the more time that you can spend helping your horse get to the base of the jump in either fashion, that means moving up to the base or slowing down to it. And if that distance is deep, it's deep. That happens to all of us. You've got to sit back. You've got to use your shoulders behind the vertical slightly. You've got to hold the reins a little tighter than you'd like if you were going forward, and really try to collect that stride and think of it like flat work. You know, the last podcast, we did that question where the chasing question, when you're trying to come out of the turn and go forward to a distance without chasing, and you increase your stride 10% over six strides or so, think about that on the way to the deep distance. Decrease 10% each stride. It doesn't have to be drastic, but it does have to be consistent. And you've got to take the number of strides you have to the jump to really help fit that stride in and collect it as if you would on the flat. And as far as getting comfortable with that deeper distance, that just takes practice, really does. You know, I learned for so long that the better distance was the longer distance, and it took me probably jumping too big, too long, and somebody going, you're going to kill yourself, for me to understand that jumping deeper is A, better for the horse, B, safer, and C, actually an easier ride if you can really have some self-discipline and learn to be uncomfortable with it until you're comfortable. And that's just practice. So one exercise that you could do at home in order to get yourself a little more comfortable with this is, before you turn, say to yourself in the corner, I'm going to wait to this jump. And that way you're choosing your deep distance before you're deciding, or before you're allowing the distance to decide for you. So that all that means is you're not waiting to see the distance. You're choosing what kind of distance you want first. And that takes away the anxiety of what's there. And that really just means you're practicing waiting and adding a stride to the jump. And Do it over and over. Just repetition, repetition, repetition. The only thing you want to make sure of is that you don't make it impossible for your horse and try to add too many strides. That can really just turn into a backwards ride. You might get a horse that thinks you're actually trying to pull it up before the jump. You don't want any of that. You just want to practice waiting, slowing down, collecting, shoulders back, and look at the ground line and practice as if you were cantering over just the ground line. It'll get easier with time, but if you take away the moment of choice and decide that before there's an option, then it gets a little easier to do when you're in the ring or when you do have a choice and you say, I don't have that pace and I need to make this work, but I know that I can do that because I practiced it. So practice makes perfect for that answer.
And not that anyone asked, but I just grab mane because that's what amateurs do. I also...
And that is exactly what to do if you're in trouble when you get to the jump. If your horse says to you, I can't fit a stride in, lady, I'm leaving the ground, grab that mane.
And you know what? I also use grabbing mane as my sign off in every single email I send.
I did notice that.
Because
I like it.
That's how I approach my professional job. So I'm always grabbing mane.
Love it. Love it.
Finally, we have Darian from Connecticut who writes, what are a couple of items that you'd never go to the show ring without as a rider?
All righty. Well, this is just a preparation question. So generally, whenever I go to the ring, I have my backpack and I'm assuming I'm going to the ring in my full show outfit. So that means I'm wearing my breeches, my shirt, my belt, my jacket. I'm in my helmet. I have my boots on. I probably have spurs on. And in my bag, I have at least one, if not two or three different sized spurs for the ring. And that's not just because I might be riding multiple horses, but that's potentially for my own horse. There are lots of times when I'm training or riding and I want to change the spurs before we go in the ring or in the schooling area, depending on the horse's mood. Like that last question, sometimes they don't get up to the ring as quiet as we think they should be, or vice versa. They're cold and tired and we need a little more spur. So definitely a couple of pairs of spurs, at least one stick. So you have that as maybe you don't always use it with your horse, but you have it as backup. I have boot cleaning or boot polishing items in there to make sure I'm clean and shiny before I get on, at least two towels. I usually also in my backpack have a hole punch, which it sounds like it should be an item in a grooming box or a grooming backpack, but you never know when you need it for a saddle, you know, for a, somewhere on, you know, on your stirrup leather or even for your spur. I've broken spur leathers or spur straps right before I go in the ring and need to punch a hole into a new one. So a hole punch is actually a really good tool. A pair of scissors. Those are useful for a variety of things, obviously. A couple of extra number strings. Can't tell you the number of times I've gotten to the ring and needed an extra one, whether it breaks or the groom forgot the number and we have to sort of manage a new one with someone else's number, whether that's turning that upside down or backwards, and some water and a snack. A snack is definitely, that should have been first on my list, actually, on there. So a variety of things, you know, you think of it like a grooming backpack as far as what you need as a rider and what your horse might need, and you should be good to go.
And then again, from the amateur point of view, a flask. Because let's there just you be go. Honest.
Exactly. Yep. That can certainly be in there. Oh, and I always carry around sort of a personal mini shower kit because you know how we can get smelly and gross at the horse show. So if I have a minute to go in the bathroom and wipe my face off with the face wipe and put a little deodorant on, those are in there too.
It's a good day.
That's right. Exactly.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the Show Jumping Podcast. Be sure to join our Facebook group, Overheard on the Show Jumping Podcast, and send in your questions there or to Ashley@horseradionetwork.com. Keep your eyes up and your heels down.